Good evening. Thank you again for being here tonight. Thank you, David, and for the two who've led us in prayer. And my brother, Stephen Foster. Stephen and I come from the same general area of Middle Tennessee, the Manchester, Woodbury area. And Sandra does as well. And therefore, Stephanie does as well. And we are very proud of them. We had them at Freed Hardeman for a number of years and glad to loan them out to Faulkner for the time being. Let me say my thank yous to everyone at the beginning. Obviously, a very special welcome to those of you visiting with us has already been said. But Jimmy and Trina, I want to say a special thanks to you and to your family, growing family, and very thankful for the great work that y'all do with the congregation as well as with Faulkner. Obviously, to David and to Beth, and David, of course, has double duty as an elder and a minister and does both extremely well and song leader too and everything else in between. Grateful to Brother Jimmy and to Brother Terry, our other elders, for extending the invitation for us to come and for the hospitality that y'all have provided. Boy, second to none. Our second meeting here, and Joan and I have enjoyed every moment of everyone. We are more impressed with the growth of the congregation this time than we were last time, even though we were impressed with everything last time. But all these growing families, my, our heart is just full of gratitude for. In fact, if there's anybody in the area that has, you know, a really growing family, we're going to get the word out. They need to be at Redland Road, you know, to be with everybody else that has a really growing family. Two of my favorite, all-time favorite former students are here tonight, Burton Walker and Abby Latham. Many of you know Abby from birth, Scott and Michelle's daughter, and how blessed I've been to have them 4 years each at Freed Hardeman. A story behind Burton is that when Joan had her first class right out of college, in the third grade, she had Burton's mom, the former Pam Conley, Brother Marlon Conley's daughter, who has held a meeting here, right, Brother David? And so we're very proud of him and of her. Thank you for being here. And then tonight for our fourth award-winning meal. Yes, Joan and I are trying to decide between Nutrisystems and Weight Watchers as we return home. I'm telling you, tonight the elders and deacons, I really did not know what to expect. And then when I got here, I should have known because obviously all these men have great wives and there were a great number of our children here. And so it was just like the other nights. I must tell you this, though. Through the years, I have said to various places that if I can have a deviled egg during the fellowship meal before a service, I will promise to preach shorter. And I've had various responses tonight, to that. Somehow, I did not in this meeting, even though they've been available every single time, I have not had one. I just didn't get to them. I think they were on a secret table, and I just didn't get to them until last night. So I had one last night. Tonight, along the line with Miss Joan and me, was our sweet Sister Pat Green. And I leaned over and I said to Sister Pat, I said, when I get a deviled egg, I preach shorter. And just like that, she said, here, have another one. I kid you not, you can ask her about that. We get all kinds of encouragement, don't we, Brother David? But boy, have I been encouraged. Y'all have done much more for me than what we have been able to do for you, I promise you. And we go back to Henderson revived, refreshed, renewed, and, you know, looking forward to our 38th year of Horizons that starts Sunday, our future church leaders workshop. We've had a number of students from Montgomery that have attended that through the years. And Joan will say, well, the real highlight is our grandson, Awesome Dawson, is coming on Monday, you know, from Bluffton, South Carolina, and his mom and dad, too. But we're really looking forward to the week ahead, and we're looking forward to the future ahead for this congregation. We love it here, and we love each of you very, very much. You know, famous last words are famous for a reason, or just famous words at all. My mama used to tell me, my mama decided not to bring me into the world until she was 39 years of age. And so I said to her one time, I said, you know, mama, five girls and then me, y'all didn't plan to have me, did you? And she says, we didn't plan to have any of you. Get over it, you know. No planning. There was no planning to it. But anyway, she used to tell me memories of the Great Depression. And she could tell me stories about what it was like on Pearl Harbor Sunday morning, how awful that was. And really what a great president FDR was, but especially during the Great Depression, to have that, he'd have these fireside chats on radio. And in his inaugural address of his first election, he had that famous statement, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." But he would repeat that theme. And that really is a biblical theme. You know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. We're people of faith, and we move forward with faith and with confidence, and we lay our fears upon the Lord as He has told us to do. And so that's a famous line. I can remember watching, I believe in the eighth grade, the inaugural address of JFK. Many believe that it is second only to Lincoln's second inaugural address down through the course of history in terms of quality and so forth. But in the in that speech, near the end of the speech, he says, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." I haven't got around to it yet, but I intend to preach a sermon sometime on the line, "Ask not what the Lord can do for you, but what you can do for the Lord." Or, "Ask not what the church can do for you, but what you can do for the church." I haven't got around to that yet, but I intend to do that somewhere, hopefully along the way. We remember Neil Armstrong's famous line. I remember it being a Sunday night and the whole country stayed up to see the first landing on the moon. And what he would say as he took that first step, that's one small step for man and one giant leap for mankind. Some three decades later, in his older years, he would admit that he wished that the statement had been more true, that he wished that that accomplishment had accomplished more than what had happened in his view. But still, it's a great statement, isn't it? Especially famous last words are significant. Nathan Hale, for instance, the young 21-year-old patriot about to be hanged and given the opportunity to say some final words, said, "I regret that I have but one life to give for my country." And I wonder how many people in our American citizenry have been inspired by that, especially those of you who have served and do serve even now in our great military. "I regret that I have but one life to give," and his life was over at 21 years of age. I think of Brother Otis Gatewood opening the book that he wrote many decades ago, the great missionary among us to Germany and to Eastern Europe, behind the Iron Curtain a lot. Brother Gatewood used to come to the Free Hardeman Lectures every year, no matter where in Europe he was serving. He would be there, be a featured part of the program. But as a boy, I read his book called You Can Do Personal Work. And the opening line is, "Be a good boy, Otis." And he said the reason for that statement being so significant to him, he was at the bedside of his mother when he was only 6 years of age. And that's what she said to him, "Be a good boy, Otis." And that had become the motto of his life. He went on to use that as an introduction to the Lord's last words, "Go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations," the Great Commission. I think of the late Brother Ira North, who along with the eldership and membership of the Madison Church back in the 50s and 60s and 70s in North Nashville, built the congregation to, at the time, the largest congregation among us, 3,500 members, and he had the Amazing Grace Bible class on television that some of you may have watched through the years. And Brother North was taken from us at only about the age of 61 or 62. He was always a generation or maybe even a quarter of a century ahead of everybody. You know, his mind was so full of ideas that he had ideas out there that people hadn't thought of yet. And oftentimes he was criticized for them. And then later everybody started doing them. But on his dying bed in a Madison hospital, his wife and their four children were all gathered around his bedside, three boys and a daughter named Dolly. And when they realized that the time was short for their dad, Dolly started crying. And the story goes that Brother North mustered the strength to rise up in his bed and say, "Don't cry. The Lord knows what he is doing." And I don't know the family that well outside of Brother North himself, but I would just like to think that that has been inspiring words to them, you know, since his untimely passing. I think of some very famous words that come from our text tonight. We're looking again at some of the great teaching of the beloved Apostle Paul. I don't know if you've noticed or not. I know I speak for David and Brother Jimmy and for all others who are preachers among us. You cannot study the Bible and you cannot study the New Testament in particular without having a very deep and abiding love for the Apostle Paul. You just can't. The Italians have an expression called polyamore, which means love for Paul. And that is really true of those of us who try to preach and to teach because we learn so much from him. There's the content of all of his messages, both those that were orally delivered in the book of Acts, as well as those written in what we have most of the remainder of the New Testament. And the thing, though, that is in addition to that is the example that came before that. I mean, it's one thing for someone to say something great. It's another thing to live that way and to provide the foundation and the context from which that statement comes. And so when he gets to what we know is the last letter that we have from him, 2 Timothy, and therefore the last chapter that we have from him, chapter 4, and he says to young Timothy, his son in the faith, "I have fought," notice this, "I have fought the good fight." The fight in which we are engaged for the Lord is good. It is honorable. It is just. It is true. "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith." What a tremendous statement. In fact, there are other statements in that closing chapter with which you are familiar and with which we will close tonight. But I want to pause and think about just one of those. I'm especially touched by the expression, "I have kept the faith." We know about fighting has the imagery of a soldier, a Christian soldier. And we know finishing the course, you know, some think that's just for golfers. It's from an athletic world. Paul was a big fan of athletics, obviously, because he refers to it a lot. "But I have finished the course," the race, in other words, some translations will use. "But now I have kept the faith." The question for tonight is, what did he mean by that? I want to suggest to you, first of all, the faith is about all that Paul had kept in his life. When he comes down to the end of life, You know, I was sitting with a brother some years ago where I preached at the time, and we knew that he had a terminal illness. We did not know for sure just how long that he had to live, but it was but a matter of weeks at the time. And I was visiting with him, and he says, "You know, Brother Billy, when you get to this point in your life, the only thing that matters," and then he went on to mention, "are the only things that matter." And he went on to talk about things that you would too. Obviously, your relationship with the Lord, but also your wife, your children, your grandchildren, all of these other things that we think we have to have in life. They just are not meaningful when you come. You're about to leave them, but the things that you really dread leaving are those that you love so very, very much. But you know that as a faithful child of God, you're about to be ushered into the presence of the Lord. So he had the right perspective. And when we think about what Paul had, last night we talked about the difference between the way the words faith occur in the New Testament and the way that we're using the word here tonight, or the way that he's using the word faith here tonight, is not just simply his faith in the gospel message, but the gospel message itself. I have been true to the faith once and for all delivered to us, as Jude would say in verse 3. So it's about all that he had. It's about the only thing that he possessed. And as you look at that, you look at various passages and you see some of the things we have listed here that Paul had given up. He'd given up his family background. He'd given up his heritage in becoming a Christian. Paul is not the only one. There is a story. Some might even call it a legend. I could not go to a direct source and verify the truthfulness of this account. But do you remember when Barnabas left Antioch of Pisidia in Acts 11? Excuse me, Antioch of Syria, the third largest city of the world at that time. When he left Antioch, after he had gotten there and saw what a great evangelistic opportunity it was, and he realized that he could not do the work by himself. So he leaves Antioch, he goes all the way back to Tarsus of Cilicia, the hometown of the Apostle Paul, where he would be known as Saul by his Jewish name. And he finds him and brings him back to Antioch. Now, that's what Luke says. But there is a legend, or at least some historical note from man's view of history, that it took a while for Barnabas to find Paul. And the reason is that Paul was disowned by his family, and he was on his own. And so you could not go to the family and they'd be able to say, "Well, this is where he is." They didn't know. But eventually, according to the story, Barnabas found him, and the rest is history, as we know. Well, he'd given up his heritage. He talks about in Philippians 3 about he'd considered all the things that he'd given up, being a Pharisee among the Pharisees, being born of the tribe of Benjamin, you know, one of the favored sons of Joseph, or rather of Jacob, excuse me, being someone who was the most zealous for the law of anyone, who most likely was on the fast track to becoming a member of the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Supreme Court. He gave up all of that. He said, "I consider all of that but waste in order that I might gain Jesus." So he gave up his heritage. When you read 2 Corinthians 11, 23 to 28, as well as 2 Corinthians 12, 7, you know that he gave up his health. We do not know what Paul's thorn in the flesh is, which is mentioned in chapter 12. But in chapter 11, there's that long list of the times that he'd been stoned and left for dead, how many times he had been scourged like Jesus was before Jesus was crucified, how many times that he'd been shipwrecked, how many times he'd been robbed by both foreigners as well as his own fellow countrymen. I mean, you look at that list, and especially as someone who is a prospect for becoming a Christian, you could look at that and say, "My, if that's what it's like to be a Christian, who wants to sign up for all of that? Well, all of those things do not happen, of course, to everyone, but they all happen to him. And the thing that he's really emphasizing in that text is, it's not so much all of the physical things that had happened to him, but on top of all of that, the emotional concern, he even uses the word anxiety, and you know he told the Philippians not to be anxious, but he admitted his own anxiety because of all the churches, all the congregations that he had helped establish. And let me tell you what it's like to be a minister, can I? I cannot leave the metropolis of Henderson without being worried the whole time that we're gone that something is going to happen to somebody. A few years ago, Joan and I were going to be gone for a period of 3 weeks consecutively, and that was unusual for us. We try not to be gone more than a Sunday at a time. But I got up and said to the congregation, I said, look, don't let anything happen to any of you because I'm going to be away, as if, you know, I was some important person or something. I'm just talking about the way that I feel. I don't want anything to happen to any of you. And, of course, we didn't want anything to happen to us either. But that's the way Brother David feels, I can tell you. 24 years with you now, I believe, and there is not a night. And this is the way it is for the elders, too. The burden, if you please, and it is the godly burden of concern for the congregation, never leaves you. There are some jobs that you can cut off at 5 o'clock. You cannot do that with the Lord's work. It is nonstop. And by the way, we wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, that's just the nature of it. But Paul said, I've got concerns about every congregation that I've had the opportunity. You know, those Corinthians and those Philippians and Galatians and Ephesians and those at Thessalonica, all of those places. Colossae, you know, all of those places. And so his heart was very heavy. It took away from his health. His home, all you have to do is look at Acts 13. All the way through the end of the chapter, all the way to the end of the book of Acts, chapter 28. And to know that Paul was always traveling. He was always on the road. He very much identifies with Matthew 8:20, where the Lord said about himself, the foxes have their holes and the birds have their nest, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Talking about the Son of God. Son of God has no place to lay his head. This world is not our home. You know, we're just passing through. And so that was something that he'd given up that most of us enjoy. Like the Lord, Paul knew what it was like for your fellow workers to desert you when the going got rough, when the going got tough. Luke was an exception to that. In this book of 2 Timothy 4, Paul will say in verse 11, only Luke is with me. All the people that have been with me, only Luke is here with me, the beloved physician. I look forward to meeting Luke, don't you? I love him. He says absolutely nothing about himself. Gives us the gospel according to Luke and the book of Acts, which if you put those two books together, you have the longest part of the New Testament from one person. Now, we have several books from Paul, but many of them are shorter. So Luke is the one who gives us most of the New Testament than anyone else, and yet he never says anything about himself. The story is not about him. It's about the Lord and about Peter and the apostles and Paul and so forth. But others had forsaken him. And then he had given up hope in this life, but not in life to come. In verse 6, right before verse 7, which serves as the basis of our text tonight, he says, the time of my departure has come. I am ready to be offered, that is, as a sacrifice unto God, going all the way back to the imagery of the Old Testament where there were animals sacrificed to God. Well, his own body was going to be sacrificed to God, and that was nothing new. because he had lived sacrificially. And so he says, the time of my departure has come. I am ready to be offered as a sacrifice. So his hope was not in this world. Now, you and I live looking forward to something, right? Those of you who work very, very hard in the spring of the year and the early summer of the year, sowing, planting, you look forward to reaping, you know, when the harvest comes. You know, we're looking forward. We're looking forward people. And we've got to be that way in terms of making our way through life. But beyond that, we are a people of hope that sees the eternal city that has been made by none other than God. Paul had kept the faith, but notice he had kept his faith in the faith. Really, the faith was the only thing worth keeping. When you really get down to it and you go back to that passage in Philippians 3 and verse 8, and you look at all those possessions, you know, that a lot of people store up, and Paul was never in want of funds because he was a tent maker and he was able to make tents. You know, every Jewish man would teach his son a trade to make their way through life, to make a living. And so Paul's father had to have been a tent maker. And even though he did not need contributions that congregations would sometimes send to him, like the Philippians, he would let them know, I did not need the gift, I did not ask for the gift, but you needed to give it. In other words, the blessing is in the giving even more than the person who's doing the receiving. But when he lined everything up, here he was imprisoned in Rome. He had nothing perhaps but the clothes he was wearing. He tells Timothy, when you come, bring the books or bring the parchments. Bring my cloak, the outer garment, what we would call an overcoat. He was even without an overcoat. Bring my cloak that I left at a certain spot along the way, because winter is coming. And so he didn't have a whole lot, but that was of no concern to him. When you get to that point in life, you really understand the place of possessions. Possessions are things not to be held on to. They are to be, yes, enjoyed, but they're also to be shared. They're to be used. There's a great emphasis in the New Testament upon early Christians and their generosity toward brothers and sisters in Christ. Hospitality. Toward even strangers. Remember when Hebrews 13 says to be hospitable even to strangers, because who knows, you may entertain an angel unaware. Well, that's a great emphasis there. And we have to have possessions in the world, but compared to what he was going to be receiving, the faith was worth much, much more. In his faith, all of his needs were met. The faith was such a great body of material, I'm talking about the gospel message, that as simple as the Bible story is, it can be as deep and as complex and is than any other kind of thought or of thinking of man that is out there. Some things are easier to understand than others. History, for instance, compared to math. I will take the history, okay? There are just some things easier to understand than others. Christianity challenges us at our deepest level, but it's also easy enough to understand that our little ones can understand it and look forward to the day that they too will be baptized into Christ and become members of God's family, right? So, it challenged his mind. It challenged his conscience. He talks about what a privilege it has been to preach the unsearchable riches of Christ during the course of his life. And that is a great statement from Ephesians 3 and verse 8. The faith gave him the greatest purpose in living. Philippians 1:21, he says, "For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain." And you could translate that this way: "For to me to breathe is Christ, and not to breathe would be gain, because I would be ushered into the presence of the Lord." And then the faith enriched his heart. Go back and read the number of times Paul opens his letters. And he always opens in the very same way that people would write personal letters. There would be the identity of the author. There would be the identity of the audience. There would be a prayer for their well-being. There would be the main contents of the letter. And then there would be the salutation or the concluding greetings. All of those elements are in all of Paul's letters. And when he is giving the opening greeting to his brethren, so often he says how much he is praying for them. And I don't know about you, but if I could receive a letter from the Apostle Paul and to hear him say, "I am praying for you," it would mean a bit more than receiving that from just about anyone other than the Lord himself, right? Some things mean more because of the person who is saying them. And so when you look at Philippians 1, 3 through 8, you see what joy the Philippians are to him. You see how much he loves them with all of his heart. And you see how much he is praying for them. He's the one in prison, but he's praying for them. And that was so typical. In fact, it is in that precious little book that he says, "I thank my God upon every remembrance of you." And that is a verse that we need to share with each other. So many of us need encouragement. At various points in life, all of us are going to need encouragement. Appreciate the prayer tonight for this very special list of people who are ill among the congregation. That's not just a ritual, brethren, that's taking names and specific lives to the very throne of God from a group of people who love them and believe that the Lord will respond accordingly. Well, Paul very much had the faith to enrich his heart and expand his heart. Which would you rather be? On the side of the man who was Saul of Tarsus, that was taking the lives of young Christians in the faith in Jerusalem, was going to in Damascus and anywhere else that he could find them, or the saintly Paul, who is going to those very same people, even the ones who are doing the attacking, and trying to save them once he learned the truth? What a different person. What a living example of the word conversion, of really turning from one side to the other and being a whole different person as a result of it. And so the faith was all that he kept, but it was the only thing that was worth keeping. And it is for us too, when we really get down to it. And then the last point, the faith always kept him. I kept the faith, but Paul could also have said, the faith has kept me. The word "kept" is a very special word in the original language of the New Testament. It is really a military word that has the imagery of, here is a soldier or a group of soldiers in battle. They're in a foxhole. They're in a bunker. And they have a garrison of other soldiers that are out in front of them, or they have a great wall of protection that is out in front of them taking the bullets while they can return bullets, and they are being kept from the path of the fire. They're being preserved, in other words. They're being taken care of. And spiritually, we would call this, they were being saved from all enemies, even the devil himself. And so Paul could write in Philippians 4, it doesn't matter to me whether I am in adversity. I've known that. I know it now. But I've also been in times of great prosperity. Paul had lived a great life. And he knew what it was like. It really didn't matter to him because he knew where he was about to go, whether he was in adverse situations or prosperous situations. And I want us to think about that and make application as we bring our lessons to a close. You and I are so blessed and so sustained. We are kept by the faith. I'd like for us to remember this dual emphasis of this expression. Yes, we must keep the faith. We must be true to the faith. We must be here regularly for our worship services, our Bible studies, our gospel meetings, our vacation Bible schools, whatever it is that we have the opportunity to participate and to help, on occasion even lead, because we are keeping the faith. But the result of that is the faith is keeping us. The more involved that you are in evangelism. And I love the many pins that I've seen this week about that says, think souls. And we had that included in one of our prayers tonight about praying in particularly for the lost among us. And may our eyes never grow dim or even blind to those around us that need what we have so much. But the faith had kept Paul, and we have kept as well. I want you to think about those who have taught us, even from our mom and dad's knee, the great Bible stories, the Bible characters that they could make come to life, those who have taught us from cradle roll through the primary grades, all the way up through Bible study, and now many of whom are teaching themselves, others. In my home congregation, like your home congregation, Joan had the opportunity to grow up in the great Henderson congregation where we are now. She can remember still when N.B. Hardeman was the preacher there. And I can remember at the age of 10 when Brother Hardeman held his last gospel meeting of his life at the age of 86 in my home congregation. I'm very proud of that, because it gave me the chance to at least get to know him a little bit, even at the age of 10. You think about being blessed by people like that. And you know, they do not have to be the best known names in the brotherhood. They can just be the salt of the earth kind of people. They can be people who are never up in front of the congregation, but they always have a good word. They have a word of encouragement, they have a word of instruction, and sometimes they have a word of correction that we need. Otherwise, we would go on in our era. And so one of the gifts that we have by being in the faith, you know, everybody's either in the faith or they're out of the faith, no in between, is that we are blessed and sustained by those who taught us. We enjoy the fellowship of our brothers and sisters in Christ. Boy, how do I love it to come into any church auditorium and to see people just loving each other. That's especially true here. We have a hard time getting started on time sometimes. And the reason for that is because of the great fellowship. It's more than just that kind of fellowship, and more than just the kind of fellowship that is around fellowship meals. We're talking about the fellowship of the work. Some of us go on mission trips together, and we are changed forever by it. Our son Scotty returned recently from a week in El Salvador. He's made trips before, but this was his first mission trip there. And at his home congregation in South Haven, Mississippi, he delivered a lesson the first Sunday night that they were back about five life-changing lessons learned in that 1 week in El Salvador. Oh, how we are strengthened and grow by taking the gospel to other people, especially third world countries. We're encouraged by both the worship and work of the church. We are able to endure the storms of life by the Lord's promises and powers. In the Estes congregation, back in the summer of either 81 or 82, this is also a congregation out from Henderson where we had the privilege to serve. One summer, we had three malignant brain tumors. And one was a five-year-old little girl named Holly, beautiful, angelic. And one was a 20-year-old college sophomore at Freed Hardeman, and the other was a 28-year-old college teacher at Freed Hardeman. And think about the ages of each of those, how young. And for two of the three, the treatments and the surgeries for both the student and the teacher, surgeries and treatments were effective, and their life was saved and continue with us. For that little five-year-old Holly, who had tremendous faith and is an inspiration to people even today that go back that far with that church and know the story. For instance, one of her last words was in the hospital, when her mom and dad were around the bed and they were crying, of course, one holding one hand and one holding the other, and she just looked up and said, "Don't worry, I'm going to be with Jesus." That's great faith, isn't it? And you know what? That's exactly where she is. She's waiting for them, and they know it. During the midst of all of that, one of the family members of those affected said to me, "I do not know what in the world we would do if it were not for our brothers and sisters in Christ." Now, they had brothers and sisters of a physical realm, of a fleshly realm as well, but they were talking about the church, the people in the church who rallied to their side, who rushed to their side, who were there for every possible need, and especially were they praying 24/7 that the very best outcome, if possible, could be enjoyed. Paul says, "I have kept the faith," but the faith kept Paul. And so he comes to the close of the great story of his life by which we are encouraged and strengthened by saying, therefore, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness which the Lord, the righteous judge, has promised to me, but not to me only, but to all of those who love his appearing. You know what? Whether he realizes it or not, he's looking across the centuries, even down to June 27th of 2018, and he's thinking about people like us, who if we will keep the faith and be kept for the faith, we can anticipate the very same kind of reward. Do we deserve it? No. Paul will be the first to say, "I don't deserve it. But the Lord has promised, and as we've said before, he can't break a promise. He won't break a promise." I wonder tonight if there's someone who would like to be able to have the kind of faith that sometimes we admire in the lives of other people. Sometimes we look at the life of Jesus and we say, "Oh, well, Jesus should have been that way. He was the divine Son of God," as if to say, well, he was also human, or if not to say, he was also human. He was one of us. Or to look at the life of the Apostle Paul, well, Paul was awesome, and he should have said the things that he did, and he should have died the life that... Hey, Paul was one of us. But he was one of us who withstood all the tests and remained faithful. You know what? We live in and among people like that. I'm looking at people that I have every confidence are like that. You would not leave the Lord. You would not leave the Lord's church for for anything in this world. And as one of our former students one time said, speaking to his peers, he made this statement, "There is nothing in this world that is worth losing heaven for." Now, maybe you wouldn't be surprised that a Bible professor up in years would make an observation like that. But you're talking about a 21-year-old going into his senior year, saying to his fellow students, and you know what? Ever since that day, I know him very well. Ever since that day, he has kept to that. And he's more than twice the age of that now. So we have every confidence in him. And we have confidence in you too. Let us be people of faith, but let us also be faithful. Tonight, if there's someone who needs to be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, perfect time. And by the way, the invitation does not end at the last verse of the invitation song or the closing prayer. I wonder how many people have been baptized into Christ after most folks have left the building and made the decision and said to the minister, can we go back inside? I'd like to be baptized now. And that has never been greeted, to my knowledge, with a no. We'll wait till next time. No, 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 no. Whatever the moment, whatever the hour, day or night, you are ready to be assisted in your obedience to the Lord. But why not now? What is more important to you than to being in Christ, in the church, in salvation from your sins, knowing that if life were to be taken from you tonight, or if the Lord were to appear tonight, that we would do nothing but smile at his appearing? And if that is your need, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing.